Hi, I'm Carmen LaBerge. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. It is Friday, December the 7th, 2018. Boy, every time I say December the 7th, I am mindful that December the 7th is indeed the day that lives in infamy, the anniversary of the bombing of Pearl Harbor. I have some reflections on that, which I will share with you in the connecting point at the bottom of the program, because our program is loaded today. In just a few minutes, I'll be joined by Ed Stetzer. Ed's going to talk today about a meeting that is going to take place at Wheaton next week. And I wanted our listeners to not only know that this is happening, but to have the opportunity to listen in as the conversation about how evangelicals are going to engage and address sexual violence, harassment, and abuse in all of its forms on behalf of Christ and his people, all for the advancement of his kingdom. And so that is what this G2 summit is about, responding to sexual harassment, abuse, and violence, and having evangelicals actually substantively engage in a conversation that is forward-looking about this subject matter. So Ed Stetzer will be here in just a moment to share with us why such a thing is happening and how we can all not only pray for, but understand what's happening and participate in it. Then I'm going to be joined by Travis Wusso from the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Church. Travis is based in Washington, D.C. He keeps his finger, he doesn't just keep his finger on the pulse of all things sort of life and religious liberty oriented in terms of what's happening. He actually pushes the pulse in some, he quickens the pulse on some things. So through the advocacy of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission on Capitol Hill, particular items of business and legislation are encouraged, those things that are consistent with Southern Baptist convictions on things, because that's what the ERLC is all about advancing. And so it's helpful to have somebody like Travis reflect with us on the year, which is now virtually past. So we're going to look back at 2018. We're going to talk about some of the significant religious liberty stories and life stories of the year past, human dignity conversations. And we're going to look ahead a little bit into 2019. Some of those conversations might be about legislation that is pending or legislation that, you know, we would certainly want to see advanced. I know that there are states that are considering heartbeat laws in terms of restricting and limiting abortion to the point in time when you can actually hear the human heartbeat of that preborn baby. Folks who are advocates of abortion and advocates of abortion at any point along the development of the fetus, they have already said, hey, if any more of those heartbeat legislation bills pass in states, you know, we're gonna start bringing lawsuits against that. And those would be the kind that would rise eventually to the attention and level of the U.S. Supreme Court for what people would anticipate would be a revisiting of the decision related to Roe v. Wade. And so you might just be thinking to yourself, hey, what's happening now that I should be watching in terms of that which lies ahead? And as we move from 2018 into 2019, I'd be interested to know what are the kinds of things that you're watching? What are you paying attention to? You can always email me, Carmen@myfaithradio.com. What are the stories and storylines that you would be interested in hearing us reflect on here on Connecting Faith? Things that you would like to see us bring the mind of Christ to bear on, conversations that you are challenged to engage in a way that you want to be certain honors Jesus, right? Sometimes we're just giving people a piece of our mind, and we don't want to do that. We want to give people the very peace of the mind of Christ. And in order to do that, we have to cultivate the mind of Christ on the matters of the day. And so that's what we are all about here on Connecting Faith. I do have a new piece posted at the My Faith Radio website on the Connecting Faith page. Many of you have asked, so from time to time during Advent, I like, you know, drop a little, I don't know, crumb. I don't know. There's just these things that occur to me that are like, well, hey, if we did that, that would certainly make Advent a more intentional experience for us as Christians. And so I started making a list of those, and I have five on my list so far, but I already have another list of five, so I can go ahead and promise you in advance that in addition to the five things that are posted at myfaithradio.com today on the Connecting Faith page, the five ideas for making this a more intentional, I think I've called it Merry Intentional Christmas. To make this a more Merry Intentional Christmas, there's five ideas posted, but I already got five more. So next week is the promise of five more ideas for you to put into a practice in your life. Okay, so what are we reading and hearing in the headline news today that is maybe sparking your interest? I did get a follow-up from somebody via email that I think we talked about it yesterday, the story yesterday about the principal in Nebraska who told teachers they couldn't do anything that was in any way related to Christmas whatsoever, including secular, what you and I would consider very secular Christmas. Well, she has now been suspended. She's not at school. So I'm not really totally surprised by that. It is Nebraska, after all. And so we just want to say, hey, if you're living in an environment where somebody, you know, in view of city, somebody says, hey, you can't do that because that's expressly Christian and this is an expressly public environment in terms of, let's say, school, public school. You can say, that's actually not what the Supreme Court has ruled. We can do things that are expressly religious. We just can't do things that are exclusively in support of one particular religious expression. So, you know, folks who want to have Hanukkah expressions this time of year are totally free to do so, in addition to folks who want to express their Christian faith in public. Okay, with me now is Ed Stetzer. Ed has been with us on many occasions in the past. He is joining us today to share with us specifically about something that is going to be called the GC2 Summit. Ed, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
It is always amazing to be with the amazing Carmen, and good to talk to you and your audience. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, we love to have you on. Tell us what's happening at Wheaton next week and why you're involved and why evangelicals need such a thing.
Well, it's next Thursday. It's called the GC2 Summit. GC stands for Great Commission, Great Commandment, GC2 Summit. And we're talking about reflections. And we've got a time now in the season of Me Too where there's been issues of harassment and sexual violence and abuse. And at the same time, there's been Church Too where some of this has, well, been dealt with maybe poorly or not well in churches. So we're kind of calling an evangelical summit. I've asked some friends to come, and there's therapists and trauma counselors and speakers like Christine Kane and Max Lucado and Beth Moore and others. And we're gathering together to kind of talk about how we can do better. And people are watching online. People are coming to Wheaton. There's still time in most of the area where you're broadcasting, Carmen. And it's they can get more information at GC, letter G, letter C, two, letter number two, -summit.com. And we'd love to have them come. Hundreds and hundreds are coming here, and people are watching online all over the world.
So, friends, remember, Ed Stetzer holds the Billy Graham Distinguished Chair of Church Mission Evangelism at Wheaton College. He also serves as the Dean of the School of Mission Ministry and Leadership at Wheaton. He's the Executive Director of the Billy Graham Center, and he publishes church leadership resources through Mission Group. Because of all those reasons, you are well-positioned to be convening such a conversation. But on a personal level, you're also raising girls. And so when you think of the church, big C here, when you think of the church that your girls are entering into as emerging adults and young adults, does that influence your desire and your motivation to help us get this right going forward?
Oh, wholeheartedly and fully true. I think that you have a 14-year-old, a 16-year-old, and a 20-year-old, and they're growing up in a world where women are seen as commodities, not valued, and more. You know, I'm an evangelical, so I have theological beliefs that undergird what I do. And some of those beliefs have to do with the church being a safe place that people can be encouraged and discipled and become leaders and more. And I think that churches are, I'm just being honest, Carmen, we talked about this, you know, offline as well, is churches have not done really well in and around some of these areas. We've heard of national scandals. We've heard, I mean, even this week, news broke about another sexual abuse situation in a major church. And we're just trying to say, we're not going to figure it all out one day, but can we start a conversation that we can do better in these areas? I'd like to see the church a better place for my daughters, for sons and daughters, and people all over the world. And ultimately, we're trying to do our part by hosting an evangelical conversation and summit here at the GC2 Summit.
Friends, again, the website that you want to check out is gc2-summit.com. The event has three objectives. One, to equip church leaders. The second objective is to give voice to survivors. And the third objective is to challenge toward a better way going forward. I note on the website, Ed, that one of the things that is that's highlighted here is that you are going to have some on-site trauma support. It occurs to me that anytime we start these conversations, we are opening up not only the opportunity for people to be vulnerable, but we're opening up those conversations to very real, persistent pain and hurt that has been caused. And so I wanted to be sure that you were affirmed in having that as something that is included in all of this. And anything else you want to add as we go to break here today?
Yeah, thank you for mentioning that, because that's something that gets overlooked. And I get that, you know, when you have, you know, Beth Orr and Max Lucado and Christine Kane, people can look at just the speakers. But even two of those are survivors, and they'll share some of their story as well. But for us, we're just trying to start a conversation. We can do better. We call the conference Reflections. I think we can do better. And it's not, and I want to encourage men to come. It's not just this is something for the whole church, men and women, to be a part of this conversation as well. We can do better. We want to do better. I think we have to do better for the future of the church.
Friends, that's Ed Stetzer. The website you want to check out to get more information on this is gc2-summit.com. Thank you so much, my brother, for joining us today and for leading this conversation.
Thank you.
Hey, friends, I got to take a quick break. When I come back, I'll be joined by Travis Wusso of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Church. We're going to take a look back at 2018 and a look forward at 2019 on issues of religious liberty and life. I'm Carmen LaBurge. You're listening to Connecting Faith. Hey, friends, you are listening to Connecting Faith. Welcome back. It is time for us to do more than just survive. It's time for us to thrive. One of the people who helps us as Christians to engage the culture in meaningful ways, particularly when it comes to public policy and the way that we can make our voices be heard in that arena, is Travis Wusso. Travis serves as the Vice President for Public Policy and General Counsel for the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Church. Travis led the ERLC's first international office located in the Middle East prior to joining the Washington, D.C. office. Travis has been a frequent guest here on Connecting Faith, and we're thrilled to have him back today. Travis, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
So let's take a look back at 2018, and you can approach this any way you want to, because I know that you're passionate about issues related to life and religious liberty, and you're passionate about those things here in the United States and with our brothers and sisters around the world. So however you want to sort of slice up the pie to get the conversation going as we look back at 2018, I'm just passing the ball to you and you run with it.
Yeah, no, that sounds good. You know, this last year was a crazy year. I was talking with Dr. Moore yesterday, and we just were reflecting on all of the big things that happened in 2018. In some ways, it's a year that felt like 4 years. There's just so many things that happened. And so as we're looking back, just kind of across our agenda, the way we think about our agendas, we work on issues related to human dignity, religious liberty, marriage and family issues, and issues of justice. And, you know, so across kind of those, you know, those four big buckets, There have been some big things. There have been some things that may have flown under the radar, and so we can kind of dive into them. So beginning with human dignity, I think the biggest highlight for us was the pro-life victory for at the Supreme Court in the pregnancy care center case, NIFLA v. Becerra. And, you know, that case is significant. You know, what was it, just to remind the audience what was going on in that case, the state of California had passed a couple of really, really onerous laws that restricted the ability of pro-life pregnancy centers to operate. It included all kinds of advertising requirements, disclosure requirements, licensure, and all of those sorts of things. And the Supreme Court, in a very strong 5-4 opinion, struck down those California laws. And so it was significant for really two reasons. One, you know, those laws themselves presented a very troubling trend, and you know they needed to not stand. But the second issue is, you know, these cases pop up all the time. You know, in the last year we were involved in a similar case in Baltimore. There was a city ordinance in Austin, Texas. And, you know, the abortion industry looks at pro-life pregnancy centers as a real threat to their business model, which is why they've been trying to get states and local city councils and so on to pass these ordinances that try to run them out of business. And so this NIFLA v. Becerra case stands against those, and I think is a major setback for that agenda, for the abortion industry, and also will help pro-life pregnancy resource centers, not just in California, but all across the country, be able to operate in a manner that's consistent with their religious beliefs.
Okay, so that gives us sort of the first bucket answer to the question on human dignity. And we had so many like mammoth religious liberty stories this year. Is there one that kind of rises to the top for you?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously, we could talk about Masterpiece Cake Shop, which is, you know, was a real earthquake of a case. I mean, I think it caught, you know, the way that case was decided caught a lot of us by surprise. You know, I think there, I can say this now that we're on the other side of it, but you know, there were a lot of religious liberty advocates that were not sure how the court was going to handle Jack Phillips's case. And, you know, so that victory, I think, can't be overstated. You know, setting aside sort of the debates about how broad or narrow that, you know, the decision ended up being, it was still an important cultural moment that demonstrated that there still is room for religious people in, you know, as we're sorting out the contours of the debate between the LGBT rights community and the religious community. But I want to talk about a different issue, which is the Child Welfare Provider Inclusion Act, that may not have come across the screens of your audience. And what this bill would do is it's a bill that, and I'll just be clear, it hasn't passed, but we made progress. So that's the preview, and I'll tell you about the bill real quick. So what the bill would do is it would allow faith-based adoption agencies and foster care agencies to operate in a manner consistent with their religious beliefs. You know, your audience may know that in Massachusetts, in the District of Columbia, in Illinois, and most recently in Philadelphia, and soon to be, we fear, in the rest of Pennsylvania, the state welfare agencies have basically said, if you religious adoption and foster agencies, that you have to place with same-sex couples, otherwise we're not going to license you, or we're going to not permit you to operate in the state. And so what this bill would do is to stand as a protection for those religious organizations. But of course, the point of all this has nothing to do with religious organizations and whether they can operate. It has everything to do with kids who are waiting for homes. And so, you know, what's happened in all of these states where Catholic Charities or you know, St. Vincent de Paul or whatever, you know, whatever the religious foster or adoption agency has been run out of town, is what it means is that there are fewer families to adopt who are standing ready to adopt or serve as foster parents for the, in some cases, thousands of kids who are waiting in line in that particular state for a home that can love them and care for them. And so, you know, what this bill is really all about is, you know, again, it's not about institutional religious freedom as much as it is ensuring that kids can get a home. And so, you know, as you can imagine, this, you know, this is a controversial issue. You know, it's already cropped up in a lot of blue states, but this bill was included in the labor, health and human services, and education appropriations bill this year. It was passed as an amendment to that bill, and the bill ultimately didn't become law. And so, you know, you might be asking, well, why am I talking about, you know, an amendment that didn't actually end up becoming law? And the reason I mention it is similar, you know, it's a similar story to what was going on with the Masterpiece Cake Shop case. You know, there, I think, are a lot of politicians on the right and in the center who are really afraid of touching any religious liberty issue that deals with a conflict between religious people and the LGBT community. And I think what the movement, positive movement on this bill showed is that you can stand up for a religious liberty issue and the world doesn't end. And our hope is that this movement will give politicians, you know, on the right, on the left, and in the center, an opportunity to take a step back and try to work through these issues in a reasonable way, not in a partisan way or not in a hysterical way, but enables us to look past the conflict and see what really matters here, which is kids finding healthy, loving homes.
Friends, I'm talking with Travis Wusso from the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Church. He leads their Washington, D.C. office. He is the vice president for public policy and general counsel. And so, Travis, I think that maybe when we come back from the break, what we'll do is we'll talk about justice, because I know that there are not only some positive things to look at in the year past. I would love for you to remind people about the event that the RLC held in Memphis. I'd love for us to look forward to the Evangelicals for Life event, that not only, you know, sort of the one that you had last January, but the one planned for this January. I'd love for folks to sort of have the opportunity to get a sense of what is on the radar or the horizon for criminal justice reform. So if there are other things you want to talk about as well, but I would love for you to kind of frame some of that for folks so they know what to anticipate and they know what they can be thinking about looking forward on the criminal justice reform front. Does that sound good?
Sounds awesome.
All right, friends, you are listening to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. My conversation partner is Travis Wusso. He and I will both be back after the break. I'd encourage you to check out what the ERLC is doing at erlc.com. You can follow Travis on Twitter at Travis Wusso. Wusso is spelled W-U-S-S-O-W. This is Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge, and we'll be right back. I'm Carmen LaBerge. You're listening to Connecting Faith. I think that coming back music was a tip of the hat to Travis's Texas history. I have no idea. I like that. It was quite a little knee slapper of a coming back. Hey, I'm talking with Travis Wusso. He serves as the vice president for public policy and general counsel for the ERLC, the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Church. He's bringing us up to date on what's happening in terms of religious liberty, human dignity, marriage and family and justice issues in D.C. We're taking a little bit of a look back at 2018 and a little look ahead to 2019. Again, Travis, thank you for joining us today on Connecting Faith.
I'm more than happy to be here. I do have to say, you refer to my Texas past. You know, Texas is a state of mind, and it certainly is not in my past. I just want to be really clear about that. But
you know, everybody's been everybody has been happy to wave the Texas flag, certainly over the last week, celebrating the life of George Herbert Walker Bush. So I think that if you're going to be waving the Lone Star flag, today's the day to do it. So go right ahead.
Yeah, that's true. Well, so kind of shifting to issues of biblical justice, you know, last year has had some bright spots, has had some, you know, some setbacks. And, you know, you mentioned before the break the MLK 50 conference, which was held in Memphis on the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassination. And it was a great time for the church to gather and kind of take stock of where we are, how far we've come, how far we haven't come, and kind of look at some challenges and kind of take on some of these issues moving forward. And, you know, I think from a policy standpoint, when we think about racial reconciliation, racial unity, it's a cluster of issues. You know, there's a criminal justice component, there's an employment component, there's a housing component to it. You know, just a policing component. And so one of the issues that we've been working on over the last year, really the last 2 years during the entire Congress, has been the issue of criminal justice reform. And, you know, this is one of those issues that has brought together a strange group of bedfellows. You have folks on the right and on the left coming together. I've been very puzzled by the characters in some of the rooms that we've been in advocating for this issue over the last year. And, you know, we're now in the final couple weeks of this Congress where, you know, this bill is going to happen or it's going to not. It's passed the House. There's a bill ready to go with a very broad bipartisan group of senators ready to support it. And the bill is not right now is stuck in the Senate. And so we're continuing to work on that, and we will continue to make this a priority over the you know, through the rest of the lame duck session. I don't want to handicap how it's going to turn out, but you know, it is one of those issues that has tremendous support, and so you know, it's a bit of a head scratcher why the bill's not moving. You know, another big issue that was going on this year, of course, was the debate about DACA recipients or Dreamers, which happened both in the House and also in the Senate. You know, in terms of immigration, and you know, that was an issue where the Congress fell short and failed to come up with a permanent solution for this category of immigrants. You know, those kids who were brought here by their parents through no fault of their own. They've grown up here. Many of them don't even know, don't even speak Spanish. You know, President Obama famously said of them that, you know, they are American for in every way except for their papers. And so we're going to continue to work on that. I think one thing to watch, you know, maybe shifting to looking ahead to 2019, is there are a couple of cases sort of moving their way up to the Supreme Court. So whether the Supreme Court takes up this case about whether the president properly rescinded the DACA program back in September of 2017 is the issue. And so it's unclear to me whether the court is going to pick that issue up. But if they do, they will hand down a ruling in June of 2019, which depending on how the court comes down on it, could trigger, you know, another legislative crisis to come up with a solution to this. And, you know, again, I mean, looking ahead, you know, maybe what I just say is, you know, stepping back and kind of looking at 2019 more broadly, you know, we have divided government for the first time in a couple of years. You know, obviously, you know, the only thing that's on cable news right now is, you know, is Mueller and the Russia investigation. And, you know, so depending on how House Democrats decide to use the subpoena power that they gained in this last election, you know, it could be a lot more of the same. I mean, and if they do, then there is not going to be much bipartisan spirit in this town. Not that there has been for the last several years, not just the last two, but even reaching back further before that. You know, and so, you know, for us, I think we're going to be looking at, you know, looking at some smaller bills in terms of things that, you know, that might fly under the radar and improve the lives of everyday people, you know, and I think we're also going to have to get involved in some of these big fights. You know, one of the, you know, going back to the issue of human dignity, one of the things that we already know is going to be on the chopping block. There was an article, I can't remember the publication, Mother Jones or CNN, it might have been, that was an op-ed from a Democratic strategist you know, basically, you know, calling their shot on how they're going to fight to remove the Hyde Amendment, which prohibits the use of federal funds for abortion. So we know that is going to be a big issue through 2019 and through 2020, and it's one that we're getting ready to fight.
Hmm. Hey, friends, again, my conversation partner is Travis Wusso. You can follow him on Twitter at Travis Wusso. You can find him online at erlc.com. Travis, I think that when we, you know, when we survey the horizon related to these issues, we can be keeping an eye on legislation as it moves, but we can also keep an eye, as you have already alluded to those things that are going to be moving up to the Supreme Court. I was mentioning to the audience earlier that, you know, even as states consider like heartbeat laws related to restricting abortion, we then, you know, we hear from abortion advocates that they intend to challenge those laws anywhere that they are passed. That looks to me like the kind of thing that might rise eventually to the level of the Supreme Court in terms of revisiting Roe v. Wade. And so when you look at sort of those cases that are out there across the country in the area of religious liberty or in the area of human dignity and life, are there other things that we should be kind of thinking about and aware of?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, you mentioned the cases that go to, you know, to Roe and to Casey. You know, there's several angles for that. I mean, there's sort of abortion access. You know, there's an interesting case that is an interesting case in Indiana. Coming out of Indiana, Indiana passed a law prohibiting abortion on the basis of gender. You know, so it's like which is a real problem. You know, so that case is coming up, whether the state has the authority to restrict abortion if it's used for a discriminatory purpose. So, you know, I think there, you know, over the coming years, we're going to see a lot of different cases challenging the edges of Roe and Casey, you know, testing what is the parameters of an undue burden on the so-called right to abortion. So, I mean, I think that's definitely something to watch. On the religious liberty side, there are a number of cases percolating up to the Supreme Court that ask the question, well, what is sex discrimination on the in the context of employment, and how do we define this word sex? Does it include sexual orientation? Does it include gender identity? And so right now there is a circuit split between several different circuits have answered that question differently. And so I think maybe this term, maybe the term, certainly within the next few years, I think we can expect some of these cases to make their way up to the Supreme Court as well to resolve those. And I think depending on, you know, maybe the last issue, you know, going back to the issue of immigration, I mentioned already the Dreamer, the president's action to revoke the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, the DACA program. But there are several other immigration actions that the administration has taken or is contemplating. You know, there was a discussion right before the election on birthright citizenship. You know, so that's another issue that could be decided by the Supreme Court. Maybe not this year, depending on how quickly they act. But, but within the next few years, I mean, I think those are the kinds of cases I think that we can definitely see making their way to the court.
I'm curious if there's, you know, if you're aware of any efforts related to amending or changing the civil rights language from 1964 to somehow change the definitions that would have been understood at the time in terms of male and female or men and women, to somehow change the meaning of that to align with contemporary ideas related to sexual identity and gender expression.
Yeah, well, there certainly is. I mean, the Democrats have introduced the bill for the last 10 years or so, a bill called that they call the Equality Act. And I think in the House, we can expect it to be, you know, labeled H.R. 2, H.R. 3, you know, the low single-digit numbers is a way of for the party in charge to signal the importance of a particular issue. But I think we will definitely see floor action in the House on the Equality Act. What the Equality Act would do is work through the Civil Rights Act title by title and add sexual orientation and gender identity as a protected class alongside sex and race and ethnicity, national origin, religion, and so on. So that is definitely going to be a part of the national conversation over the next couple of years. Now that the Democrats have taken back the House, you know, there are bills on the opposite side, on the Republican side, that would prohibit a court from redefining the term sex to include sexual orientation and gender identity. That's a bill called the Civil Rights Uniformity Act. These issues, you know, while the Equality Act, there's a chance, I'd say maybe a pretty good chance, that bill is going to pass the House. You know, it obviously does not have much of a future in a Republican-controlled Senate. I think we're going to be looking at a couple of years of gridlock around these issues. And I think what we're hoping for as an organization is, you know, people are going to be talking about these issues, and it's a national conversation that we definitely need to have. We're going to be working hard to make the case that that religious freedom, as far as I can tell, still is a right that's protected in the Constitution, and therefore our government needs to do everything that it's obligated to do under the Constitution to provide a platform for people of all faiths or none to worship freely and to live out their faith in their everyday lives.
Okay, Travis. So since we've got you on and you are an attorney, let's have a quick equipping conversation for parents out there whose kids are coming home from public school and their teacher told them that they couldn't pass out those candy canes because those candy canes are shaped like a J.
I haven't seen this.
Okay, so they can do that though, right? Like kids can share. Kids are allowed to share. Like the First Amendment protects a child's right to express their own faith, and if that's in the giving of a candy cane at Christmas to their public school friends, like wouldn't you say that just by your own personal opinion, not speaking on anybody's behalf here or even necessarily as a lawyer, but wouldn't you say that's protected speech?
Well, yeah, I mean certainly, and I think, you know, the way that the courts have understood the expression of the religious expression by children in public schools has been overly narrow for decades now. I think that is another issue, I think, to watch in the Supreme Court. I don't know of any cases working their way up to the court right now that might resolve some of these issues directly, but certainly indirectly. And I think in the next few years, we might see some of these cases. You know, and I think my kids are in public school, and I think anybody whose kids are in public school, you know, these are challenges that are bound to come up from time to time with administrators. And, you know, I think one of the best things that we can do as people of faith, this isn't always going to solve every problem, because even if you're nice, some people are still going to be rude to you. But building a strong relationship with your PTO, with your kids' teachers, and also with administrators, I think can go a long way to making sure that at least if we disagree, we understand each other. And I think that's putting ourselves in as good a position as we can to be treated fairly.
Travis, I appreciate your willingness to jump in on conversations like that. And I thank you for the way that you equip all of us throughout the year to engage winsomely but also intelligently on the issues before us as Christians in the culture. So, Travis Wousseau, thank you for joining us today on Connecting Faith. Friends, you can find Travis online at erlc.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Travis Wousseau. Travis, thanks.
Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
Likewise. All right, friends, I got to take one more quick break. When we come back, I'll be making the connecting point. You're listening to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. Hey, friends, welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. We have arrived at the point in the show that I like to call the connecting point. And so I wanted to make the connecting point today just and simply in relationship to the date itself. So today is December the 7th, a day that will live in infamy. For those of you who are not aware of why December the 7th is the date that lives in infamy, it may be because the events of this day that are infamous happened now 77 years ago. And so that might be part of the disconnect that folks in the culture experience when we talk about this particular day. The other reason may be that really the last World War II veterans are dying. And the celebration of the life of our former president, George Herbert Walker Bush, just this past week. In fact, he's being his body is being interred. Well, it was interred yesterday. Once we arrive at these points where, you know, guys who were 17 on this date and turned 18 and enlisted like George Bush did, you know, they are now either quite aged or they have passed on from this life to the life that is to come. So, of course, we're talking about Pearl Harbor, December the 7th, 1941, the day that lives in infamy. So you may be wondering, well, what's the connection of this to Christmas? Or how might I use this day to reconnect the eternal with the everyday? And I don't want to be glib. I don't want to have you think that I'm not serious or seriously minded about the events of Pearl Harbor. But I do think that when we start talking about this in the culture today, the challenge is that most folks are very disconnected from World War II. They're very disconnected from the concept that the Japanese would be our enemy. They're very disconnected from the idea that America would be so interesting as to be a threat. When I say this, when I suggest to you that the holidays tend to be full of bomb dropping, Mary dropping the bomb, I'm pregnant, on Joseph, and Joseph dropping the bomb to his family and others that he was still going to marry her, even though he knew he was not the father. The angels dropping the bomb on the shepherds, and the shepherds dropping the bomb on the people of the surrounding region of Bethlehem. The wise men dropping the bomb on Herod, and Herod dropping the bomb on all the families who had male children, the ages 2 and under in Bethlehem. You think of all these things, and you consider how utterly disruptive, how earth-shattering, how life-changing each and every one of these announcements, proclamations, surprises, however you want to think about them. So I guess I want to say, if this Christmas you've got a parent or a child or a sibling or an aunt or an uncle or a niece who drops a bomb at over the holidays, just recognize that, you know, you too can find shelter in God's everlasting arms. Nobody is going to say or do anything that God can't handle. God has got this. God has handled worse. So I guess I want us to be mindful of all the ways that history can change in a moment, how unpredictably that happens, how little control we have over it. And we don't yet know why today, December the 7th, 2018, is a day that will ever be remembered in history for any particularly impactful reason. But chances are, in many people's lives, today will be the day. Whatever that means, today will be the day that their life changed forever. Today will be the day for some people around the world when they came to a saving knowledge of Jesus Christ. For some people, today will be the day. Today will be the day that they got a terrible diagnosis. Or today will be the day that someone that they dearly love perished. So when we think of days and dates on the calendar, we have to remember that although 1941 is a really long time ago for many of us, for God, it's literally, yesterday. It's a blink of the eye. And the events related to Christmas were real events and real history that happened in the lives of real people more than 2,000 years ago. And even that amount of passage of time is really not a lot in God's economy of time. And so part of what I want to communicate today is whatever you think that's happening today that's just absolutely, you know, somebody dropped the bomb, a relationship has failed or ended, or a kid dropped out of college, or someone has filed for divorce, or someone has been diagnosed with a terminal disease, or someone says they're not coming home, or somebody says they're moving back home, or somebody calls from jail, or somebody calls and says there's an accident and I'm sorry to inform you that. Bombs fall, but we can take cover in Christ, and we can share the reality of God's amazing grace in Jesus with other people who are utterly shell-shocked by the events of the day. Now, it was literal bombs that fell 77 years ago on ships in Pearl Harbor, and they fell impactfully upon us all as a nation. So too, the less ballistic but nonetheless damaging and painful bombs that fall today, literally in places like Syria and Yemen, but relationally here. Damage is caused to real people and real relationships, but beyond the initial strike zone. And so just as many of the pilots at Pearl Harbor lost their lives, people today experience acute trauma that affects people other than themselves. And so as we observe a day that lives in infamy, I think that maybe it's sobering to consider that we live in a time of infamy, that we need to be people who are possessed of the very spirit of the peace of Jesus Christ that passes all understanding, even as we live in the context of a culture and a world that is in many, many ways at war with itself, with one another, and with the Lord our God. And so let us be people who are redeemers of the day. If you know a World War II veteran, today's the day to reach out and simply say, I remember. I don't remember in the same way that you remember, but I remember that you answered the call to serve and that you went not knowing if you would ever come home. And I want to thank you for that. If you don't know a World War II veteran, today is an opportunity for you to reflect on the willingness of other people to give their lives in your stead. And then to celebrate the reality that that is what Christ ultimately did for every single one of us. And so when you consider today, the date, December the 7th, 2018, the year of our Lord, I want you to remember what happened on this day. But then I also want you to consider what memorable thing might yet happen today that changes someone else's memory of this day forever. Is it possible that you could share Jesus Christ with someone today in such a way that their life would be changed forevermore? And their the date that they would mark in their personal journal forever and ever would be December the 7th, 2018. That's my encouragement to each and every one of us today as we consider that we are the ambassadors of Jesus Christ in the midst of the world that he so loves, and we are the ones charged with reconnecting the eternal with the everyday in ways that honor Jesus. And so as you go out there into the world, know that you are an ambassador of the King and an ambassador of the kingdom, and that you are out there to make the principles of the kingdom known. Be a winsome living demonstration of the gospel always and in all ways, and know that you go with my great encouragement. All right, friends, that's all the time we've got here today on Connecting Faith. Visit us online at myfaithradio.com, the Connecting Faith page, where I have posted some merry, intentional Christmas ideas. And you can visit my ministry website as well at reconnectwithcarmen.com. Have a great day, great weekend, and God bless. Thanks for listening to this conversation from Connecting Faith. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com.
And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend to grow the impact of Connecting Faith. Also, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player and never miss a conversation.